this game against the Lakers. Okay, so
hate the. Well, I mean, we can say it now. Now that we can't monetize, I fucking hate the Lakers, bro.
Cool. That's good enough for me. But
so, am I going to go and I'm going to rewatch this game? Yes, but I am not going to watch the Lakers win this game. I will refuse to do so. So I'll stop before the Lakers win.
It's that third quarter, dude. Man, they opened up a gash and then they just kept hitting shots. But whatever, okay.
Whatever. You know, let's move on from that.
It's a back-to-back. Let's talk about that type of situation, all right? We have back-to-back games. How does that affect our legs? We've seen a young team go through this before. No big deal, right? We're not going to trip. What's next, though, dude? What's coming up? How about that article? Wait, I wish I could remember the author's name because I hate
articles. I'm going to pull it up right now remember, as you're talking about.
They said something about ESPN article. Thank you for sharing that with me because I don't have that subscription, but it talks about the Thunder comparing to the 73-win Golden State Warriors, specifically from a jump shooting perspective. And it mentioned that the Oklahoma City Thunder is actually a historically good jump shooting team.
Absolutely.
This article didn't mention Chip England by name, but I think that this was about Chip England, wasn't it?
Yeah, I absolutely. If you look at the article and you look at what it's pretty much telling everybody where the game has, I guess, progressed to. Started off with the Warriors and the incredible shooting shit they could pull off, you know, and it was pretty cool to watch, right?
Right.
But go
ahead.
A lot of ball movement into something else.
It talked about guards setting the screens.
Sure.
And then from there, creating, you know, mismatches from bad decision making because there's a lot less emphasis put on off ball, defense and stuff like that. Like, what did you think about all that?
I think it's great. I think that the way that they explain it and they allow you to understand that the Golden State Warriors had something special going down, right? And they're trying to let you guys know through this article that this is the beginning of something special in Oklahoma City. If you read between the lines in the article and understanding what the article is saying, is it's all about what's happening in Oklahoma City right now and following that line. It does talk about defense, you know, here and there, but I want to go far out and say something about our defensive guards, because I do think that we're going to end up having three of the best five defensive guards in the league in 3 years. And because of that, it's really hard to compare Oklahoma City Thunder to the Golden State Warriors when you have a team that's not only going to be a high efficiency offense, unlike the Oklahoma City Thunder is, but they're also going to have some of the best guard defenders and Chet Holmgren that we haven't even, you know, thrown in there. So there's just so much aspects to what's happening in Oklahoma City that there's a lot of people that are starting to get whiffs of it. And they're starting to say, could this team win 73 wins in the next 3 years, 74 wins, 72 wins in the next 3 years? And the answer is yes, they can.
Yeah, I mean, the article didn't dive too much into other things than the guards. It mentioned a little bit of Chet. It mentioned different elements. But when you take all the things there are to this Thunder team, all the positives you see, and you just get rid of this idea that this team is young. We focus really, really heavily on what they do right. They have low turnovers. They play elite defense. They are elite shot makers as a team. So I think this idea that there's a ceiling on this team, you know, it's kind of dumb. What do you think? Are they dumb for putting a ceiling on this team?
Well, I think that if you're going to put a ceiling on this team, I think you have to start off in the minimum amount of years that this team could have a ceiling for, and that's 8 years, the minimum. So that's why these guys are writing these articles now. They're starting to recognize there's something special, right? There's like, wait a second here. In Oklahoma City, could three of the best, let's say, three of the top five position players, so like you got center, you got point guard, and you got shooting guard, could we own the league with that? And you have to start looking at the efficiency of J-Dub and what he's able to do on the court in his 50-something, 56, whatever it is, percent from shooting range, and what 40 something percent from 3-point range. So you look at these guys and what they're able to do, and they're only in their second year, and you're saying, well, how much better can they get? Well, Could JW become better than Shea? Like, could Chet become the best player in the league? I mean, like, we don't know where the developmental aspect is going to go with these players. But I think that's what's so rich about what's happening in Oklahoma City, is because it doesn't stop there. Because we play GM every single day, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, we go out there, you and I are trying to figure out what's next, what's going to happen next. But one of the things that I constantly look at is, because we are in that GM state of mind right now, is where do our picks lay? Just out of curiosity, right? Houston right now, right, is the easiest schedule I've seen for the last 20 something games of the season. It's Houston, right?
Yeah. Why does that matter? Houston has,
well, this is why I want to say, because Houston, I feel like they're one decision away from tanking for the rest of the year. And if they go into that tank state of mind, because if you look at the last couple of years of the draft, there's always been a top 17, like 7 or 5, right? That's jumped up into the top 4. So if I'm looking at that and I'm looking at Houston, I'm saying, listen, I don't want to get our opportunities to lose this pick completely out. I want to have an opportunity to move up. So you got to get to the top 7 worst teams in the league to do so, right? So I think that's possible for them, but they have to tank. So for them, if they tank and they're able to pull that shit off, it doesn't matter about Utah's pick. Because if we're able to get a top 7 pick in the league for this next draft, it doesn't matter what Utah does. But I do think Utah is going to have a good last 20 games of the season. And I think they're going to put themselves in a position to keep their pick this next year, even though they're going to have a good 20 games of the season. Because you look at Chicago and Atlanta, Brooklyn, Toronto, you know, these teams, like right there, they're in the East. They're going to have a more easier access to what they need to get to, and they're going to be tanked out at a certain level, so they're not going to be necessarily trying to lose. So I think we won't necessarily look at the Utah pick as something that we'll be able to get, because I think it'll land at 10 or 9. But I do think that Houston pick is something that we have to look at. And as two guys that love the game, like, the only reason we're bringing the draft up is because with 20 something games left, you know, we've got a lot of assets on this team, and we're starting to understand that there's a lot of spaces that are going to be filled this next year, more so than we've ever had. Because last year at this time, we're wondering who's going to be cut from the team in order to fill space for our draft, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're sitting here saying, oh, we got 3 or 4 spots open after the season. How are you going to fill those spots? And it's different, and it's nice, because at this point, we've got maybe 2 picks that are going to come out. We've got probably get a second rounder in there. If we decide to trade up, like, who knows, man? Like, this is going to be a lot of fun to be able to see what Oklahoma City does with the open roster spots, because we could go and get a trade. I mean, we could go and get, I don't know, one of those players that everybody's always been dreaming about, because we have the open roster spots. We have this open space for money. We have all these other things that people are talking about. So there's certain things that we got to stop and we got to look at and say, could this be the year that we fill those open roster spots through the draft? Or are we going to go out and score because we get a top 7 pick and a pick at number 11 from Utah, and we're able to trade number 7 and 11 and pick up a sick ass fucking player? So I don't know, man. That's what's happening right now. But if you look at what this team is able to do right now, if this team is able to pull off 55 plus wins, right, you have to say this is a contending team. And if you're a contending team, then Sam Presti's sitting there saying, at what point am I going to cash in some of these draft picks? Not necessarily the future draft picks, because those aren't the ones that we want to fuck with. The early draft picks are the ones that we're sitting there saying, could we trade these and get a player that's at that 25 range that's going to push us in that next category?
Well, we've seen it happen with J-Dub, and we have
so good
high hopes for Kaysten. Same range.
He's so good. His defense, did you see the other night when we were playing against the Suns and KD was being guarded by J-Dub and Kaysten Wallace was there too? And I just sat there and I was like, holy fuck, dude. Like, this is our future on our defensive end. J-Dub and Kaysten and Shea, like, these guys are going to destroy the NBA on defense. And not even throw out Dort in there. Like, that's how good our defense is, that in a couple of years, Dort could be our 3rd or 4th best defender. Have you ever heard of something like that before? I've never heard of anything like that before.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've got some steps to go, but you can see the talent. You can see the capacity. J-Dub and Kaysen have their own style of defense, the way that they attack the ball. And especially Kaysen puts pressure full court in this really obnoxious way without ever getting out of position. I mean,
yeah,
that's the hardest thing to deal with as an offensive player is like, you got to put like all these power dribbles in and like all this stuff just to get to half court. You know what I mean? And then you're trying to initiate the offense when you pick up the ball right next to the line and you're like, yep. Fuck, this guy's a pest, you know?
Dude, think about this. You put Dort out there, physicality out there, right?
Right, right.
Bodies you up, makes it difficult. And then you pull Dort out of the game to give him some rest and you put J-Dub on him. Right. Who has long, crazy arms, like go-go gadget arms.
Go-go gadget.
He also likes to body up players, but you put those arms in there and now he doesn't have to completely body people up. And then you pull him out, right? You bring Dort back in and you get him a couple minutes to warm up while Kaysen Wallace guards that player. Like, or Shea guards that player, you know, or Giddy guards that player. Like, that's what's so special about our defense is that it's not just one player that takes the load. Like in the past in the NBA, you'll have one specialized defender on your basketball team. That one defender is going to guard that best player every single year. Every single time, they're going to guard that one player. Like you want somebody to stop Shaq, guess what? You're going to have to bring three or four big men on your roster just to stop Shaq, right?
Right.
If you want to go and stop Kobe, you're going to have to go out and get a top end of the line defender. And even then, it wasn't enough. But now
you needed like the three Oklahoma Matt City. Barnes to like even be able to play. Like
yeah,
Kobe
like a Matt Barnes, and then follow him by whoever was his backup. You know, so for 8 minutes, Matt Barnes could get a rest. While somebody else played, you know, Kobe, but then Kobe would torch them, that person. But that's what's different is that typically in the past when we had to have a player on KD, right? Or another, you know, like LeBron, right? And we would switch out. We would have nobody. We had nobody to switch out on. We'd be like, okay, you know, Thessalosha, I can't even say his name.
I'll say
it. Comes out of
Tabo,
the game, right?
Cephalosha.
Yeah, Tabo, thank you. And then you had the other guy that we had was, gosh damn it, dude. John's going to get so pissed at me that I can't remember his name. He still played with our G League for a while last year. Andre Robinson.
There you go.
Robinson.
Roberson.
Yeah, yeah. So, Roberson. We've had those defenders that they literally are just there to guard the players. And when they come out of the game, we get torched by that defending or that offensive player. So, for me, that's what we have. We don't have one player for the guard position, right? We have four or five players that can rotate off of guards and small forwards and power forwards because they're so big. You know, like if our worst defender out there on any given night is Josh Giddey on the floor as a starter, we're in good shape. Like, I get it. People are going to say, well, Josh Giddey has work to do. Yes, he has work to do. But Josh is not a fucking chump on defense, man. He is physical. He is smart. He's sneaky. Like Josh is a defender that you look at and you're like, yeah, he's going to be really good one day on defense. Why do you think he's getting the playing time he is now? Because he's a specialized player that is open court and that he's getting better on defense. And the better he gets on defense, the more playing time he's going to get.
Look, and everybody has to go through challenges when defenses figure out like, hey, do this and this to make them work toward their weaknesses. So, like we saw Dort go through some serious struggles. Like that playoff series against Houston, like that was one of the most difficult series I've ever seen a player, like a rookie, go through. And by the game seven, he was responding with like a heroic, maybe even historic performance based on undrafted to being all the way there. But the games in between weren't always nice. And the games after that didn't automatically go good. He had to continue to earn the respect of the NBA. And you see Josh going through the same like trials and he's going to take his own path. I feel like Dort was in a spot where he actually was a pretty polished offensive player in high school. My understanding was he was actually really good. But when he committed to defense, people kind of didn't know that he actually was a good offensive player. So they were just like, well, dare him to shoot. And it turns out he actually could shoot. And now the whole NBA is like, why do we do that? It's like, because that's, the NBA is going to do that to you. Like they're going to put you in a spot where if you miss some shots, if you're consistent about missing shots, then every team is going to be like, here's a scouting report. They'll share it amongst each other. And pretty soon you'll find yourself in a spot where you're only playing against your weakest elements. And I saw, I forget who it was, but part of the interview that you sent me, that 73 game Warriors comparison, they talked about teams sharing information about how to stop the Thunder and how everybody's kind of throwing out a junk defense. Probably about the first 30 games or so, teams played us straight up, maybe a little bit less than that. But then pretty fast after that, they were like, we have to try different things. Early on, back when I was plugged into every game, like I should be, will be, they would, you know, it was go to a zone. And we did have a little trouble with understanding that. What is it now? What are they doing now? What is that junk defense style fuck up the Thunder move at this moment?
Well, first of all, I love how teams started going to the zone to try to stop us. And typically when team goes to a zone and we can't hit our shots, like in the third quarter or the game before when we're playing against the Suns for, you know, multiple times there, right? We just sometimes get our asses handed to us, and that's okay. I mean, I'm not like sitting here trying to say this or that, but the way that we need to continue to get our shots off in order to be able to beat this junk / zone defense that teams throw at us, it's key is what? Fucking shooting, bro. Shooting, backdoor, and getting up the court for wide open layups. That's how you bust a fucking zone. And I think, you know, not Sam Presti, but Coach D and the coaching staff has done a phenomenal job at doing that. You know, Coach Bliss does a great job with the bigs and on the defensive end, but he's been really teaching these guys. You can see him when the timeouts come out and Coach Bliss will call over a player and he's like, you've got to go back door. Got to go back. That's where it all starts. You got to go back door. You know, like, and these guys on a defensive aspect, if you're open for three, right, and you're able to sneak that back door, it's a wide open bucket. And how many times do you do that? And then finally a team says, we can't handle this anymore. You know, like that's why one of the most valuable players on our team is Aaron Wiggins, because he does that shit. He gets crazy amounts of steals. He goes back door. He does all the small things for this team and what they need. But that's how you beat it, bro. You just got to be using your brain out there and be smarter than them and fill in the empty spaces. Because if you're filling in the empty spaces, you're going to get open shots and you're going to bust that zone out. And what's happened is that there's been a few times that we've been able to bust that zone out. Next thing you know is the game's over within the third quarter. So it's all about just understanding of when to attack and when to recognize where, you know, the game's about runs.
Hey, dude, so I noticed even though we lost that game against the Lakers, man, we had 14 more shots than the Lakers in the game. That's a lot. And this is not coming from like a Moses Malone style offensive rebound, miss. No. You know, these 14 additional shots are coming from 10 extra turnovers from the Lakers. They had 20. We had 10. Sure. And elements like that. The Lakers just shot better than us. Like, you can try to boil it down to other things. They just were making big time shots. And like, teams are going to do that. I mean, Shea put up 20 points. So it's not like this is what we would call a good shooting night. And I thought the Lakers shot really well. But when you look at those 14 extra shots,
52% from the field, 47% from 3-point range.
Yeah.
Both of those beat us by more than 10%.
Right. But we still had,
and we only lost by 12.
We had 14 extra shots. Do you think there's another team that averages more shots than the opponent in the league? It's got to be us, right? We got to have the most.
Man, I'm so glad you brought this up because I don't like to toot our own horns. But like, we talked about this at the beginning of the season, bro. I mean, we went down and I told you what I thought would need to be possible for us to average 121 points a game.
Just so you know.
I said we could score 121 points a game, right? Okay. We could do that. And we're at 120.9.
Mm.
So we're there. You know, our offense is there. Our assist a game are there. Like, everything is there. Like, our offense stalls out sometimes, right? And that's one of the reasons we went out and got Gordon Hayward.
Did it again.
Gordon Hayward, bro. That's one of the reasons why we got Gordon. Straight fucking up. We got Gordon out there is because he is going to be that bridge when we're having a hard time scoring. He's going to step up and he's going to plug that hole. literally. So I'm just saying, like, when push comes to shove, if we're looking at this and getting the shots off and like as many shots as we're getting, like, it's no surprise at all, because in order for us to get to 121 points a game, we needed to have at least 15 more shots a game than we were last year. And you're seeing our efficiency rating is out of this fucking world. If people are comparing us to the, you know, Golden State Warriors, a 73 win team, Golden State Warriors, our efficiency is just fucking out of this world. So we understand where this is going. Okay. And the reason we understand where this is going is because we've seen it in the past on different teams, whether different, talked about it last episode. And somebody said, you know, the 2023 Rangers, and you got, you know, the Braves in there as another young team that people never saw in baseball. You're talking about some of the Celtics teams that nobody thought could win a championship. And you're talking about, you know, just, we could go down this list of young teams that people never thought. But the reason that this team is worth watching and why teams need to be watching this is because it's not just one aspect. It's not just the offense. It's the fact that we're scoring 121 points a game, but there's an 8.3% point difference in us and our opponents. Like, our defense is prime, is fucking prime. And it's not one of those things where it's like, you know, when you're watching we'll call it the old school basketball 4 or 5 years ago, where a team would come up and they would score 145 points. Nobody's playing defense. And it's just like everybody's shooting the ball and everybody's going down. They call it Carmelo offense, you know? Everybody's just chucking up shots, right? It's different. We're watching this team. It's because we're so, like, locked in on defense. We're so locked in on offense. It's beautiful. And if you have time and just the ability to even go through a set play that looks fun to you, like, you see something happen where we come down and it's a half court set and you just see all this movement start happening, okay, fucking pause it and go slow motion and watch where each of the players are designing to go. Because when you understand the offense, you understand where these players are moving and you understand what is important to coach, you start seeing how the efficiency is going to rule the NBA, and how all of a sudden, when the efficiency and the defense, it all comes together, that's when championships happen. We've seen it in the past. Every fucking sport across any division, professional division, college division, you see the same thing. It starts to click. And we can say this or that about this team, but the reality of this team is that we have not seen a team in the NBA with this caliber, at this young, with this much buzz going on right now, because the Golden State Warriors sure as hell didn't have it. There's something special because there's so many people talking about this team. And that's why I'm going to throw this back to you, Mark, and say, like, have we seen in the last 30 years, when we started paying attention to basketball 30 years ago, have we ever seen a team that has the potential to win a championship in the next 3 years? Fuck it. In the next 18 months, have we ever seen a team that has that ability like the Oklahoma City Thunder?
I mean, you know, kind of reminds me when Kobe showed up on the scene a little bit and they had, you know, Shaq out there.
And they got Shaq to come back?
They're like, you know, maybe... Yeah. It reminds me of what should have happened when Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady are on the same team in Toronto. Like, we were just like...
The buzz in Oklahoma City, I guess, what happened when we went to the playoffs and everybody was under 27.
Yeah, I mean, you got that one. And then, obviously, what for the Warriors, you got that, but you mentioned that already. You know, a lot of these...
But most of those teams, though,
they're
good at one thing. They were good at offense. They were good at this. They were good at that. Have we ever seen a two-headed monster like this at this early in an NBA career?
No. And, you know, that's fine, because now it's, you can very quickly go from being a sexy young team to a team that everybody's questioning whether or not you can get it done. Like, that can happen in 2 years so fast. And everybody's like, well, you know, they haven't won the big one. It's like, you know, you could say everybody said that about Michael Jordan until he did. You know, everybody said that about every great until they went on. Like, they said that about LeBron to an excruciating level. You know, the year that LeBron played us and won his first championship, I remember there were reports going into the finals that he sat down with Bill Russell. He sat down with, I don't know, other champions and was just like, what do I need to do to win it all? Like, tell me, great one. And they were like, just keep being you, LeBron. You know, and it was just the fact that, you know, I think he had gone to the finals three or four times, at least two times for sure. And he was running into a wall probably several more times than two. And
I think he went like 9 years in a row, bro, which is crazy.
It was crazy. He was a finals machine. But what I look at with this team is we have this problem because when you take like, it's kind of like whenever like somebody's talking about, this is the first player to have 5 rebounds and 5 block shots and 5 threes and scored, you know, this many points in a game, like what they did with Victor. Yeah. It's like, and then I heard Kenny say, okay, that's a reach. You know what I mean? Like you guys are trying to make something the first ever. And it's like this crazy combination. I thought it was a pretty interesting stat, but Kenny thought it was a reach. The problem is when you start saying like this young of a team with this good of a defense, with this good of an offense, yeah, with this good of a bench, with this good of a star, with this good of a second option, with this good of a third option, with this good of a fourth option, with this good of a primary defender. It's like, there is no other team that can do that. So if you just delete the young and say, just okay, like have we ever seen a team that was this good on defense, this good on offense, this bright of a star, this bright of a defensive anchor, this, you know, then you're kind of like, well, it reminds me a lot of what you saw with the Spurs. Like, and it was different because the game of basketball was different back then. But sure, it reminds me a lot of what you saw with that. There is obviously comparisons with the offensive sets to the 73 win Warriors and whatnot. But ultimately, yeah, it reminds me a lot of what we call a dynasty. You know, like there's this depth, there's this talent, there's this continued desire to not just beat the opponent, but beat your own teammates in practice to show up and be more prepared and be a better, you know, teammate by challenging each other. Like, I wish I could see Cason Wallace and Dort go at it in practice for a loose ball. Like, oh, yeah, you know that they, it reminds me of what Michael Irvin, I think it was Michael Irvin. He was talking about what he saw Deion Sanders do every day in practice. Or maybe it was Deion talking about Michael Irvin. He's like we would go to the games and there's like, they played better in practice, but they were having, you know, record setting days, but it's like, we've seen him do all that stuff every day.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
nobody's surprising anybody out there because everybody brings it every single day. So it reminds me of a college team in that way, where everybody just cares the most about the unit and not necessarily about individual accolades or like attention or any of that stuff.
Sure.
But ultimately, like sometimes with those college units, you end up with a Cinderella story, and you don't usually end up with that in the NBA. Like, Cinderella story, what? Like, nah, not really. But people are starting to get a sense, like, maybe this is a Cinderella story for the NBA. And I don't know, but I don't care, because if, say we win 58 games or something, you know, who cares? Sure. Right. 55, whatever. Next year, people are gonna be like, well, you gotta increase their win total expectations. You know, that's what I think everybody will do. So then what?
Sure.
You're gonna expect us to win 60 games? Like, how many teams have done that over the last few years? Like, we're in this category of elite. Once you get to that category, and once you're like a perennial elite team, it doesn't matter. Like, you have to win championships. If you're not winning championships, then every year is a failure. And we're entering that phase right now. Like, and if you find yourself on the outside of that, like, could you imagine if you, the Joker didn't win the finals MVP in the championship this last year? People would start labeling him with the greatest player playing that hasn't won it. You know, and that's a shitty label. And then they start going around and talking like, does he have the it factor? Does he have the leadership qualities? So those things come. My hope for the next round of like Thunder discussion is that we won't let that creep into our fan base. Because it's unnecessary. And if you say like, hey, we're going to treat this team like a college team where like that we ride or die with them. Right. And so what if we don't win it every year? That's not, we didn't show up because we want to cheer on this team, a team to win it every year. We showed up because we believed in this squad. We believed in the community. And if they get to that point, we're never going to act like we deserve that shit. We're not going to turn into Patriots fans. Get out of here with that shit.
Man, I'm going to tell a story about Marks and I, high school, beginning of our high school playing. We had a psychotically amazing coach. His name was Rennie Nickel. Fucking guy was brilliant when it came to getting us to hustle, right? And it's some of my like things that I did as a coach was the things that he taught me. And one of the reasons was, is, I was one of those players that liked to score. And I just did, right? And that's what I cared about most was scoring. I would go out there and every game was like, can I put up 30 points, you know? And I was a sophomore and, my dad was my coach my sophomore year and I was trying to make the varsity team. It was going to be easy to make the varsity team. It wasn't going to be hard. But I had been working on my shot all season, bro, like all season. And I shot a three and coach was like, that was smart. You know, get your ass on the baseline. And my response to was shut the hell up, which immediately got me kicked off the varsity team and sent to Rennie Nickel, which at the time I was like, I hate this idea, right? But he treated me like I wasn't just an offensive player. And he's like, this is how you hustle. This is how you give a shit. This is how you put it all out there. And out of all the coaches I've ever had, I think it has to be Rennie. That's the most inspirational coach to me because of that. And I call him psychotically amazing. It's because of what he had us do on a daily basis. Like he ran us so much that running wasn't even a thing anymore. Like think about it. You run around circles so many times that like at the end of the day, you're like, oh, I only had to do that 30 times. Hell yeah. Right. Well, why? But because if you're in better shape than anybody else in that fourth quarter, you're going to play better. And it's all these little things that he did that I look back at and I say, that's so perfect. Because if you look at what Coach D and the coaching staff are doing, it's very similar. When do we play the best? The fourth quarter. We go out there and we fucking dominate teams in the fourth quarter. Why? We're better physically in shape. We care. Like there's loose ball. We're on the ground for it. We care. Like everything that we do, if you look at the practice and the scrimmages that we do, it's all like foul. No, it wasn't. Like in your face, like, da, 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 you know, like it's the competitive level that you don't see in a lot of other teams. You don't see with a lot of other players. And that is what's driving the passion in Oklahoma City with this team right now, is that desire to do better than anything else. Desire to play and desire to do it the things the right way, because there's nothing worse than being a player that deserves to be a starter, but only getting 17, 18 minutes a game. It's frustrating. Why is it frustrating? Because you know in your brain that you deserve more playing time, but you're not doing what coach is expecting out of you. So thus you're not getting that playing time. It doesn't matter if you're shooting incredibly well or putting up 8 or 9 assists in a game in 20 minutes. It doesn't matter, because what coach needs you to do has to be done. And if these guys are all falling in line like they are, and they're understanding that defensive minded sets and all this other stuff is first, and then comes the offense. That's what's so beautiful about this team. It's so unique. It's one of a kind. There's nobody else out there that's like there. There's never been a team like this in the NBA. There's never been a professional sports team like this that I could look at and be like, you know what? That team had a Cy Young Award winner on it, had an MVP, and everybody was under 25 years old. I'm sorry. And because of that, we're in for a treat. And anybody that thinks that we're not going deep in the playoffs, anybody that doesn't understand that this team is special in that aspect, that we're going to be a championship contender this year, guess what? Start watching.
Yeah, I know.
Start understanding what's happening. Start seeing the players and getting to know their names, because these fuckers are worth it, man. With all due respect, these guys are worth it.
Skip Bayless said something like, this game proved why the Lakers are happy to take the 8th seed and go up against maybe the number 1 seed in the Thunder. All right, whatever. Skip Bayless. I don't know how he ends up saying as many dumb things as it has, but anyway, we'll keep rolling. Shout out to everybody who dropped some comments. I was rolling through those.
That was awesome, bro. Woke up this morning and I was like 20 comments in the 2 episodes that we had dropped yesterday. Yeah. Unbelievable reading all those amazing things. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, just to answer a quick question, I'm no longer in Oklahoma. I'm a couple miles from the beach in Delaware. So, Delaware. Yeah, new place, new thing. It's pretty cool out here. I'll tell you about some of my adventures soon. Right now, I'm just unpacking shit left and right. But
dude, but you got your own place, man. That's awesome.
Got some digs not far from the beach, and it's nice. Spread it's a out. Nice little place, dude. Yeah, exactly. But first, we got to unpack, and we'll be keeping you guys up to date on everything that's going on in this part of the world. But if you sure. ever happen to be in Delaware, hit me up. We'll smoke a blunt. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, man. And I'll be moving soon. So if you guys don't see it, I'm already starting to take down. I'm starting to take down the stuff. Sammy, I haven't figured out what I'm going to do with the jersey because where I am moving is salt air will destroy everything. So my other jerseys I'm giving to Mark so he can hang up in his room.
I can put that thing behind me.
So I'm thinking, Sammy, you and I got to talk. I'll write you an email to see if I can just lend Mark this until I get to a place where I can, you know, frame it and put it in a glass box so the elements won't destroy it. So
I know what you
anyways,
mean,
but
it will get
it means a lot. Like, that's why I want it. You know, I'm not giving this thing away. I'm trying to preserve this thing more than anything. And yeah, dude, that's a good times. And I've got my little man up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Got the best listeners, dude. Really fucking appreciate you guys. And like Mark said, your comments meant the world to us yesterday. So thank you guys.
We'll be back soon. We're getting going. I feel the energy. Appreciate you guys sticking with us. We'll see you soon.